Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
SB Nation and Underdog Dynasty present the Underdog Podcast.
And we're back with another episode of the Underdog Dynasty Podcast, AAC edition. My name is Dan Morrison. That is Emily Van Busker. How are you doing today, Emily?
Well, I'm here. I technically should have resigned. So this is...
Yeah, you survived.
It's upsetting. I'm unwell. I'm unwell, Dan.
I mean, it's your own fault for trusting Dana.
Yeah.
That's on you.
Yeah. I was playing Guess Who's Back.
Okay.
Because I wasn't supposed to be back. But I'm back because I never left. Anyways, for those of you waiting for me to quit the podcast, like I said, I would do. I tried. It was vetoed by our boss. He was like, no, you don't get to do that just because you're upset that a team won that you didn't think would win, which is a good life lesson for us all, honestly. So I am here to take that L. We will talk about that game at the end, but let's start off with happier news, okay? Happier games, please. Well, what do you got?
I mean, we're going to start in the way we always do, which is order of operations. When did they kick off? That's how we're going to talk about it. So I can't promise it's happier news for you. But it's Tulane 27, Tulsa 13.
It's not bad news.
Yeah, Tulane absolutely dominated this game on the ground. Rushers over 100 yards. Tulsa really didn't have an answer there. Braylon Braxton played at quarterback for Tulsa because Bryn wasn't able to go. We talked a little bit about...
If Bryn had been able to go, that would have been different. I mean, that's just...
You possibly would have had to, been a closer game, being able to keep up with Tulane a little bit better. I didn't think Braxton played terribly. He just didn't play all that well either. He looked like a backup quarterback in there, but I don't think he's the reason they lost by any means. Pratt kept the game a little bit closer than it was in reality with that late first half interception that Tulsa cashed in. That made the final score a little bit closer than the game was in reality. Not that two touchdowns is a close final score. But yeah, I mean, I don't know that there's a ton else to say about it other than the better team won in the ways that you kind of expected them to.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Tulane was more physical. They had the better defense.
It was closer than Tulane probably would have liked it, though.
Again, I think that's an effect of the late first half interception that gave Tulsa short field to score a touchdown on. You know what I mean? Had that not happened, it's 27-6. And that feels like
Still happened. And that goes to my point that Willie Fritz is, again, not the foot on your throat kind of guy. That's just not – Tulane is a great team, and they're very well coached. I think Fritz is an excellent coach, but he is not an out-for-blood Michigan Jim Harbaugh drop 50 points on you because we can kind of team. That's just not what Tulane is. And that's okay. It doesn't make them less good, but it may become an issue if they do play a game that gets down to that cutthroat nature,
next week. Yeah.
We shall get to that.
I know why you chose Jim Harbaugh there, by the way, because you are you're a Stanford person.
Jim Harbaugh is the most petty. Like he's petty.
No. Pray for Michigan State next year. Yada, yada. I got it.
I'm talking about what's your deal when he was at Stanford and Pete Carroll at USC and they didn't shake hands after the game. And he will never forget that as long as he lives. He's just a petty guy and he'll run it up on you if he wants to.
I guess I don't think of Michigan as the run it up team. This is a complete sidebar for no reason. I just think of... I guess I could see...
They have, though. I'm pretty sure they've scored 50 points this season.
Yeah, I mean, like, you do that against Hawaii on accident, though.
I mean, I
550-0 this year.
I don't know that Willie Fritz would do that even on accident, is my point.
No, well, that's, I guess, fair enough.
They did 51 at Colorado State, 56 at Michigan, 59-0 to UConn, and then 41 on Penn State. So, yeah, I mean.
Well, the Penn State game was weird because it was like.
52 on Rutgers.
Or, no, they were like half against Penn State, but barely. Oh, yeah, well,
but I'm just saying, like, there's coaches that are like that, and then there's coaches that are not. And Tulane, Willie Fritz is just not that guy, and that's okay. Doesn't make him less of a coach, just different.
I also think for the whole Tulane team, it's a new experience to be jumping out to early leads and, like, you know what I mean?
True.
Even in years they've gone to bowl games under Willie Fritz, they're not consistently doing this week in, week out. So it's a different vibe. Different vibe to the whole season when you're jumping out to two or three score leads and what do I do with my hands?
It is definitely not where we thought it would be. I will say this, though. People were tweeting like, oh, they deserve more media attention. And well, I can't believe, like, I can't believe.
Texas didn't deserve it.
Well, no, it would have been.
Texas, with three losses, did not deserve game day a second half.
I agree with you. I think it should have been UCF Tulane, but I understand why it's not. I mean, because that's just the nature of the beast. But I don't know.
My problem with that is the nature of the beast. When it comes, this is a whole other sidebar that I don't want to go too far down. But ESPN decides what we care about in this sport because they own the stock, they own the product. You know, 75% of games are on an ESPN network, and then their shows are the ones that dictate the kind of broad discourse within the sport. You know, College Game Day, whether we want to admit it or not, it has a huge outsized influence on the sport. So they tell you what games are important when you watch that, which is why some people go, well, the playoffs are the only thing that's important now, because that's the only thing they often talk about is the playoff, because they put so much money into it that that's the only that they're really trying to sell that one product. And it becomes cyclical and it's annoying and it's a whole other thing.
Well, let's give a shout out really quick to the defensive player of the week who comes hails from Tulane, junior linebacker Dorian Williams. He led this defense that limited Tulsa to one touchdown, 13 points, obviously 257 yards of offense. Now that's going to be different with Brennan, but you know, it's good for what it was. He had 13 tackles, two sacks, including five tackles on third down to help limit the Golden Hurricane to 5 of 14 on third down conversions. So now Dorian Williams enters week 11 as Tulane's leader in tackles with 72, sacks with 4, and tackles for a loss 6.5. So watch out, UCF. Dorian Williams is coming for you next week. We also have an honorable mention from Tulane. Tyjae Spears, can't go a Tulane game without mentioning this young man. Junior running back rushed for 157 yards and a touchdown on 14 carries, averaging 11.2 yards per carry. Not overly active, but it's crazy because we expect these like 200 yard games from him because that's what he can do. So 157 yards is good, you know, but a little quieter for him, I think.
I don't think it's a quiet game.
A little bit of quieter game. 14 carries is not that many carries.
That's fair.
Yeah, but that's all I
think. They spread it around a little bit. Okay. They did. Can we go on all to this next game? All right.
Let's.
Temple 54, USF 28. Jeff Scott, you can't let Temple score 54 points on you and expect to get away with it. You cannot let a Temple running back average 11 yards a carry on you and expect to get away with it. Jeff Scott,
you can't let a Temple kicker score a career high 18 points and expect to get away with it. Because let me just tell you, before you
the fourth quarter points.
I mean, yeah, but this is great. Like, and I gotta shout this guy out. I special teams player of the week is usually a returner or somebody who made like a game winning field goal. Or there's a plethora of people it could be. But this week, it was graduate, you know, student. Camden Price, the Temple kicker, he's a transfer from Miami. He scored a career high 18 points, the most by any American Athletic Conference kicker this season in this win over South Florida. He went 4 for 4 on field goal attempts. Let me just tell you, 32, 34, 32, 35. Every single one, he made all 6 of his PATs. 3 of those were in the first half, gave them a very nice lead. And then he had a fourth one in the third quarter. So, yeah. That's an unprecedented amount of field goals.
Yes. And you know, the thing with this game is that it was just an encapsulation of everything wrong with the Jeff Scott era on the field. The offense was fine. It wasn't bad. It wasn't great, but it was fine. And the defense was an absolute war crime. Just an atrocity of a defense. This Temple team sucks on offense this year. They just do.
Yeah.
This is
they've
stunk on offense. I like a lot of their individual players. I like Stan Drayden. I'm not knocking. It's a process. If you look at purely statistically, they stink on offense. You know what I mean?
They're young and it's new. Yes, they'll get there.
Yes. Again, you've got freshman quarterback. You got a lot of freshmen. You got a lot of first year players in this system. There's reasons why they stink. I'm not trying to like discredit everything they're doing. I'm really not. They stink, and you let them average 9.4 yards per play. That's not acceptable. You let them score 54 points on you, and I didn't think they were capable of that. You know, it was just an atrocity of a game. You know, you won one FBS game in what was it, 3 or 4 seasons there? If you're Jeff Scott, no, you deserve to get fired. You absolutely deserve to get fired, and you probably deserve to get fired before the season even started. You probably didn't.
I think did we say that in last week's episode? Did we say if he lost this game, that was going to be? I feel like we did.
How am I expected to know what I say?
That's fair. I went back and listened to it because I had to, because I had said I was going to quit, so I had to
double check and make sure you said that.
I had to make sure what the wording was in the fine print was on that one, but
yeah, no. I mean, I think I've probably been saying he's going to get fired at some point this season all year.
Yeah.
Because you just need to win games on the field at a certain point. You cannot keep saying, well, we've got some good fundraising going on forever and expect it to be good enough. Daniel DiPrato, special teams coordinator, is the interim head coach.
We love that. We love a special teams coach.
Sure. I don't think they fired the defense coordinator too and several other coaches, by the way. It wasn't.
I mean, I understand, but I love that for him. And actually, that's one of the homies. Follows me on Twitter, so we got to get him on the show.
Yeah. I don't think he's trying out for the job unless he runs the table here. I think they're going to try to make a slight.
No, but it'd be interesting to see how you guide a ship like this for the rest of the year.
And frankly, it's a good opportunity for him to show off what he can do to try to get his next job because, you know, you're going to see the whole staff turn over most likely. Now, we were asked by Eric, who you mentioned earlier, to decide if this is a better job than the UAB job, which will, of course, be in the American next year and is open. What do you think? Is it better than UAB right now?
The USF job?
Yeah.
I mean, I think you look at a lot of factors. UAB has beautiful facilities.
Gorgeous brand new stadium.
Just absolutely gorgeous. The town of Birmingham has now got the USFL.
And I think Birmingham's a better college football city than Tampa is.
Tampa's 100%, but Florida's got the weather. It's got the bikinis. It's got the beaches.
Tampa has good access to players. So does Birmingham. Tampa a little bit better, I'd say. But people are less likely to care in Tampa if you stink because they can go watch Tom Brady play. You know what I mean? On the same field the very next day. They can go watch the Lightning, who are a very good hockey team. They've got the Rays, who are going to leave town any day now, but they exist for now.
I think there's like plus and minuses for both. And I think it's a matter of preference. So like, you can't just say which is better. You'd have to say for which coach.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like,
there's definitely better fits for one school versus the next.
I gotta say this John Gruden stuff is ridiculous.
The groomers. Every single
I'm just like, I can't do it.
John Gruden rumors. Like, he hasn't been a good coach since like 2003.
But I'm also like, there's just no merit to that. Like, someone's like, yeah, he's friends with some donors. Like, what? Yeah,
it's message board nonsense every time. But no, John, I hate when everyone brings up John Gruden seriously because some people bring him up seriously. Some people do it as part of a bit. He has not been a good coach since like 2003. Like, his teams in the NFL, he have been exceedingly mediocre since that Super Bowl that he won with Tampa. And, you know, then he took a decade off. Then he come back and was exceedingly mediocre again before getting fired in a controversial not the move to fire him wasn't necessarily controversial, but there's controversy around him, the person, for some of those emails he sent.
Yes.
Not to rehash everything there. But yeah, no, there's no reason anyone would hire John Gruden. It'd be like if USC last year had hired Jack Del Rio or Jeff Fisher because they were USC guys.
You know what I mean? Right.
It makes no sense. Hire someone good, not someone because he's a big name.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
By the way, Charlotte also opening, going to be in the American next year. By far the number three out of those three available jobs in terms of,
yeah,
in my opinion. A lot of promise, but they don't have the promise structurally yet. They don't have the facilities to match the other two, especially with USF building an on-campus practice, or sorry, not campus, an indoor practice facility and all that. So anyways, A.J. Warner, really good game, 344 yards, two touchdowns. Again, just taking advantage of a bad defense that didn't know where it was supposed to be.
Yeah.
Anything else to add to this game before we move on?
Yeah, I've got to give a shout out to Edward Sadie, sophomore running back from Temple, who rushed for a career high 265 yards and three touchdowns on 24 carries, which earned him Doak Walker, I guess, a share is what I have to say of the Doak Walker weekly honors. I'm unclear. We were not. So as a Doak Walker voter, we're given every week a ballot, and with these are the guys we could choose from in week 1, 2, 3. And I was very excited to have Sadie as my first on this one, because I think even because it's USF, that's still an incredible amount of yards and touchdowns to put up, you know, in a game. Like, you're not letting off, you're just keeping running and grinding. And he averaged, I think, 11 yards per carry. So,
That's correct. Yeah, massive, huge game for him. Dan Drayden being a running backs coach by trade,
which you love,
has to be hugely happy with that
performance. Yes, he has to be. So, what I thought was also awesome is that he had 69 receiving yards, because he has one catch for that 69 yards. And both of those, so the 334 all-purpose yards were the fourth best single game mark in program history. And he also was a career, you know, first for him, longest rush of 75 yards, longest reception of 69 yards. And his single game rushing total is fifth on the AAC chart since the conference was established. So you pretty banner day for the young sophomore running back. And you have to believe he's only going to get better, especially under Drayden. So excited to watch that run game grow.
Absolutely. Moving on. UCF 35, Memphis 28. Mike Keene got the start for UCF. John Rhys Plumlee had a concussion last week, was listed day to day. He did dress for the game, did not see the field at all. A lot of UCF fans wanted to see Keene this year because they felt that Plumlee was too inconsistent a thrower. Plumlee, obviously, a very good runner, and that plays into what Gus wants to do on offense. So that's a huge part of why he's the starter, even though the accuracy sometimes abandons him as a pocket passer. I thought Keene looked okay. I thought that he had spurts of the game where he looked overwhelmed and scared. He had one of the worst interceptions I've seen the UCF quarterback throw in some time. on his own, like, 15-yard line, hit a Memphis defender in the chest with the ball. And then he had other times when he threw the ball, a little bit better than Plumlee probably could, but he doesn't run as well. He's not going to try to be that runner. So who knows? Plumlee's still day-to-day. We'll see who goes against Tulane. Long story short there, I guess. I'm not convinced about Keene as the guy. I was surprised when they brought him in instead of Castellanos, given the fact that Castellanos had taken all the mop-up time reps before that, but who knows? Mm-hmm. Big turning point in this game for me. Memphis, early in the game, kept getting the ball into UCF's red zone and multiple times came in with 0 points, including one of the silliest interceptions I've seen, where I think seven different players batted it to each other. You can't beat good teams when you're not even getting, they say you don't win games with field goals. You definitely don't win games with, no points in the red zone. You got to be able to finish drives. You got to find a way to finish drives. That's something UCF is very good at preventing, is, they're designed on defense to let you go 40, 50 yards and then settle in and make you try a mid to long range field goal. That's what they want to do. They're okay giving up a field goal because they think they're going to score a touchdown at least every other time, you know? And it worked out, obviously, in the end. Seth Hennigan, they ran him more than I was expecting, more than he really has all year. I think that's a weakness in UCF's defense, is stopping the quarterback run, and Memphis started to exploit it. Looks like it worked for a lot of the time. So a good little extra scheme they threw in, a little wrinkle for this game. Gus tried a 64-yard field goal before half. That made no sense. Colton Boomer was about 15 yards short on it. So maybe we don't try those again.
Yeah.
That was Boomer's first miss of the season. I don't really blame him because that's like a massive kick for an NFL kicker, and he's a freshman. Silverfield went for it on 4th and 16 for no reason. Didn't have a great explanation after the game. Just kind of was like, yeah, seemed like the thing to do. It wasn't. So a couple questionable decisions on 4th down for each coach. Better team won.
I would hope so. Memphis is not, UCF should have beaten them by more. I think the fact that Memphis put up 28 is not ideal.
Memphis added a late score in this game again to make it look a little closer.
Yes, you keep saying that, like, late scores are still scores. Like,
I know. What I'm saying is,
you don't stop playing in the fourth quarter just because you're winning.
Okay, but it wasn't like a concerning. You knew the outcome in the fourth quarter is what I'm getting at.
It's concerning in that if you're beating a team,
is what I'm saying.
I mean, I understand that we're not afraid they're going to lose, but it's also like when it comes down to games where you need to be mentally tough towards the end, you know, you just need to be. I would start now. I wouldn't just be like, oh, it's fine. Like, I doubt Gus was like, oh, it's okay that they scored.
Oh, no, I'm sure.
I'm sure he was not happy about it.
It wasn't as silly as when SMU called a timeout with 1 second left to try to score a touchdown. That is completely unnecessary.
Brett Lashley, man, we're going to talk about
him in a minute.
I'm going to tap out for that. But let's first give UCF junior running back RJ Harvey props for honor roll AAC mention, rush for career high, 151 yards and a touchdown on 17 carries in the win. He was the only player from UCF to be honored in this list this week.
By the way, and one little wrinkle Gus thrown that I liked. Isaiah Bowser, the running back who they do a lot of wildcat with. He's a power running back. They had him throw a little pop pass or a touchdown. First time they've ever had him do anything other than run straight up the gut out of this wildcat thing they do.
That's sometimes fun.
Sometimes they'll have him fake a jet sweep, or sometimes they just have him go straight power. No matter what, it's north-south. Now it's a little wrinkle. Other teams have to be aware of the tight end leaking out now, and that's good to put on tape.
As it should be.
Exactly. It softens up the defense. They can't just go, 9-10 forward on that formation.
Watch Gus come out with a fullback play next. I'm telling you.
Bowser's a little bit like a fullback.
A little bit.
He's faster than your average fullback.
Yes.
But he's a pretty north-south straight-line power guy.
Shout out to the Knights for moving up 3 spots in the AP poll to 22. And then also moving up in the college football rankings. They are now number 22 after being number 25 in the first one. So getting some love.
Did we shout out Tulane for that at number 17?
We did not. So Tulane also moved up to 17.
Also just to give a little context as to why those playoff rankings matter, because I know 17 and 22 aren't competing for the playoff. They're not going to. They both have a loss, whatever.
Right.
The reason those rankings matter now, in case you don't know, is that the highest ranked group of 5 champion gets the New Year's 6 game. Right now, Tulane and UCF are the only group of 5 teams in the top 25. I think Liberty might be in the top 25 as well, but Liberty's not in a conference, which means they don't qualify for the New Year's 6 that way.
Yeah.
So just those two as of right now. Cincinnati is probably somewhere between 26 and 30 something. And I don't know. The Sun Belt's kind of eating itself alive. Mountain West stinks this year.
Stinks
this year. Conference USA stinks. So it looks like the American champion's probably getting that spot again. Moving on, speaking of Cincinnati 20, Navy 10. Emily, I am so bored of Cincinnati's offense. this mediocre offense. I'm so bored of it.
Yeah.
I mean,
I'm sorry.
Tyler Scott.
I think Luke Fickell would be, Tyler Scott with the most boring name of any player ever. The junior wide receiver was the only guy from this game on the AAC mentions list honor roll spot, 10 receptions, 439 yards, and 2 touchdowns. Very vanilla.
Do you know what Cincinnati was on third down? 3 for 11. Mediocre. They struggled to run the ball again, which isn't something I expect to have happen with Cincinnati, but there it is. They struggled to run the ball again, and this is against a not great Navy defense. Not like they threw the ball all over the field either. Ty Lavate, we forgot to mention this last week. He's out for the season.
Oh, that's right. We did not say that.
In my head, I knew it, and it's one of those things that slips the mind when you're going through.
It's a really tough blow for them because he was starting to, I think, look better.
Yeah. Unfortunate that that type of thing happens. You had Masai Maynard and Xavier Arline both play a quarterback in this game. And you could tell that it wasn't clicking quite the same way. Part of that, Cincinnati still does have a good defense. Part of that, Lavati is the guy who runs the system best for Navy. He wasn't there to
run. Yeah.
So tough break for Navy. Good tight game. I think, again, Navy's going to end this year with a not good record, and I think they're going to be better than that record shows. But I don't know how much that is good for when people only look at records and care about wins and losses. And it's been a couple years in a row where I've kind of in my head been saying, no, they're better than their record. You know what I mean?
no, they're better.
Don't look at that. Look at, the other stuff. At least Army stinks real bad this year, too. So
don't say that.
Well, Air Force just won the Commander-in-Chief's trophy. So
I mean, don't say we want the Army-Navy game to be competitive.
Yeah, but it's going to be competitive. But what I'm saying is at least the 2 years ago, his Army team would blow this Navy team out of the water. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
At least they're not in a position where Army's capable of doing that this year and should still be a good game. You can still beat Army is what I'm saying. Commander-in-Chief's trophy's decided. Air Force won it. But you can still beat Army. And that's, I think, really what...
Well, that's what they want to do. And we were there last year,
The Commander-in-Chief's trophy is what they care about every year. And if you can't win that, you may as well just beat Army.
And we're planning something a little special for this year's Army-Navy. So when we have the podcast prior to that game, there's going to be a special guest joining us on the podcast as well as at the game. And his name may or may not rhyme with Schmoey... Peshnut.
Okay. Subtle.
It's America's game, baby. This year we're going all out, all America. All things American. So it's going to be awesome. I don't look forward to their game this week against Notre Dame. I think that's going to be tough.
Notre Dame coming off a huge win.
Yeah, but I don't know if you saw the logo they came out with for the game. It's pretty sick.
I did see that. I think you retweeted it, and that's how I saw it.
I actually tweeted it out, but yes.
You tweeted it, didn't retweet.
Head over to Twitter if you want to see it. It's pretty – every time Navy does a logo, even the Army-Navy game logo, everything – I don't know. And probably Notre Dame has a hand in it too, but I feel like Navy is just clean like that. They just have clean, traditional type graphics, but it's going to be – it's sick.
Yeah. Notre Dame, Navy, they're both very traditional
versus
in terms of the vibe and the graphics that they like to put out. They like – there's a certain – it's very anti-Oregon in a lot of ways.
It's like the opposite. Yeah, for sure.
We got one more game from week 10.
Hold on. I got one more thing.
You got an honor or what are we?
Oh, well, I was going to say one more thing about Navy and I can't remember. I lost it. That's okay. Well,
if it comes back to you, maybe when we're doing
it. Yeah, I'll think about it if it comes back. But
we got Notre Dame Navy preview time coming up. So
we do. That's true. I'll circle back.
Plus, we need a full half hour to talk about this next game.
I just don't. I quit.
SMU 77, Houston 63.
And
I know what everyone wants to talk about. How ugly were those SMU uniforms? you could have done this wearing better looking uniforms. Oh my goodness, I hated them.
Yeah.
They wore black uniforms. I didn't like it. That's the point. 140 points is an FBS record in the AP poll era for combined scoring. Emily, do you know what the over-under was for this game?
Yeah, I think I don't remember actually. What was it?
65.5 SMU Jeez. Hit it on its own. Houston nearly hit it on its own. The real main difference in this game, I'm just going to go through like a couple things from the game.
Yeah, go for it.
I give you a little bit of crap, probably. Tune 3 interceptions is the big difference in this game. Those lost possessions essentially are where you see SMU have a couple score win. Mordecai, 379 yards, 9 touchdowns, plus 54 on the ground and a rushing touchdown. Clayton Tune, 527 yards, plus 7 touchdowns passing, another 111 rushing and a rushing touchdown as well. Combined, they had 1,352 yards in this game and 65 first downs. That's nonsense. Really quickly, Houston, for most of this game, played straight man coverage. And Rhett Lashley and SMU just schemed these little designed passes where the receivers would clear out corners and safeties, and they would run little slants underneath it, and they'd be wide open mm-hmm. 20 yards to run every single play. It was absolutely idiotic that Houston didn't get out of man coverage. Absolutely moronic. Meanwhile, SMU refused to tackle, just throwing shoulders and bouncing off of Houston's playmaker. And had they not considered maybe spying the quarterback run, the quarterback scramble, leave a spy in? No, both defense coordinators should get fired for this. Horrible. You had Houston, though, because there's no way SMU could have done this. Thoughts?
My thought is that nobody wants me to be happy, ever. And that includes Dana Holgorsen. And obviously, he heard the podcast. And obviously, I would like to take some credit because Rhett Lashley was like, no, we're not going to let Underdog Dynasty do us like that, and then they went and won the game. So I don't know, man. I don't understand it. That I was talking to somebody about being a sports writer this weekend and covering college football, and the more I know, the less I actually understand about some. I saw SMU play in person. Maybe it was just they were playing TCU, which I also don't think is that good, but now they're ranked number 4. Yeah, do they look like that when I see them? No, 100% not.
Yeah, every TCU game I watch, I'm like, how did they win this game? But now they're like 8 or 9-0. So
I don't think that bodes well for them come playoff time because they're just going to get smacked on their ass. But whatever, that's not the point. I do have to give a lot of credit to Tanner Mordecai. I have said he is a good quarterback. I have also pointed out his flaws, but I mean, he lit the world on fire.
Well, we both said it. He's a gunslinger who likes to stick to his first read a little bit too much.
Right, right.
The problem in this game is Houston never covered his first read. They never came close to him. And what were we calling Houston's pass rush this season, Emily?
Sack Avenue.
Sack Avenue, yeah. It was wide open down the avenue.
Yeah.
There's nothing. I mean, look, I know it's like reductive to say neither team did anything right on defense. It's obvious also. That's why I tried to come up and like when I went back and like watched a YouTube, like someone upload the game onto YouTube, I like sat down to watch it more closely a second time and to see what team they were trying to do wrong on defense.
Yeah.
And like I said, my biggest takeaway from either team on defense was that Houston refused to get out of man coverage. UCF essentially held them to 13 points in a game. Again, I'm not counting that final second touchdown, by just playing zone.
Right. Like,
then Rhett Lashley's offense thrives against man coverage because it's a lot of routes that are really well designed to get people open and get corners to have to give you space. You
know, right.
They're natural picks or screens, whatever language you want to use. They're just well designed. They clear out safety as well. And that's just a fundamental strategic error that Houston refused to get out of. Like I said, SMU fundamentally is bad on defense. They don't tackle. They get out of position. They let Clayton Tune scramble basically whenever he felt like it. There's fundamental issues there. They came up with turnovers, which was good, but they did nothing else good. You know?
Well, if you like offense, this game was for you. If you like to see quarterbacks literally duel it out, we always talk about quarterback battles, you know, matchups, whatever. This was an actual duel.
Yeah.
Like, in its purest form. So, and it's kind of funny because Tanner Mordecai gets Offensive Player of the Week, obviously, for everything he did. But then they go ahead and give Clayton Tune honor roll mention for the 7 touchdowns and, you know, 111 rushing yards. And it's like,
absolutely well deserved for both of them, to be honest. Yes. You know, I don't know if I like this type of game.
You know, really?
I think 49 to 45 is a ton of fun, but I think that you get to a point with this where it's a little too much aggressive scoring. It's a little too much just nobody doing a thing right on defense. Like if the teams have to punt once or twice in a game, that's an amount I really like, because, hey, that means the defense was trying. Defenses weren't doing anything in this game, and that's frustrating. It's like what the Big 12 used to get made fun of for, but yeah.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I just don't want to... I don't want to relive that again. I'm over it.
We can move on if you want and go towards our preview for week 11.
Let's do it. Week 11. How are we at week 11? This is insane.
The season has absolutely flied by.
It's flown by.
Week 11. So we have 6 games to go over this week. Navy's playing an out-of-conference game like a bunch of jerks.
And we get a Thursday night game, which is fun.
And a Friday night.
Yeah. I love that.
Want to go over the picks now or later?
From last week? Yeah, you can do it now.
Yeah, I was 5-0. You were 4-1. The big difference was that SMU-Houston game that we were different on.
And I told you to take SMU. I dared you to take them. So you're welcome.
And for me, it was a little bit of a coin flip, and you were so sure on Houston, you were trying to bait me.
Yeah.
And I took the bait.
I did bait you.
And it worked out nicely.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Anyways, I'm 54-16 on the season. You're 41-29. Hey, better than ESPN. Those guys are about 500 every week.
Yeah.
So I think
I'm doing better this year. I'm proud of my more grown up strategy.
I think you found a better way of balancing when you're taking underdogs instead of
trying to not play with too much emotion, which is what I did last year. So
you took the underdog like 75% of the time.
Yeah. Because I like underdogs.
It works. Let's start off with that Thursday night game. Tulsa at Memphis. Man, both of these teams really, really need the win. Tulsa, you need to win out if you want to be bowl eligible. Memphis, at 4-5, you need to win 2 out of your last 3. Again, don't know the status of Davis Spring. Tulsa doesn't really give updates.
Yeah.
Talked about this last week, how it was very hush-hush. Braxton obviously played last week. I'm going to assume Braxton until I hear otherwise at this point for Tulsa. Is that fair?
I should probably do some digging and find out for us.
It's a short week, too. So who knows? But I'm going to assume Braxton until I hear otherwise on Bren, because Tulsa just likes to keep that hush-hush. Do you think that both of these coaches are coaching for their jobs?
I don't know. I definitely think Ryan Silverfield is. Every single week he is.
Silverfield, I 100% agree. If they miss the bowl, I think he's fired. If they make a bowl, I think at 6-6 and they lose the bowl, I think there's a good chance he's fired. I think he's in a very tricky spot where he'd be comfiest when he now didn't even, and I don't know how comfy he'd be at 7-5. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just so far below where they were, a Cotton Bowl team when he took over, and now they're like fighting for a bowl game. That's clear regression. You know? That's not maintaining it, but not being able to go forward. That's just straight regression.
Yeah.
It might not be regressed to the point where you're like embarrassing, but it's not what you're going in the wrong direction overall. And I think the thing with Tulsa is, again, super hard place to win.
Mm-hmm.
Philip Montgomery's been there a long time, and he just can't find consistency. You know, 2 years ago, they were in the conference championship game in 2020.
Yeah.
This year, they're probably not making the bowl, if we're being honest. You know?
Yeah.
You say, hey, it's been a nice little run here, but we need to just get a fresh start. I don't know. That's my kind of thinking on, is that both these coaches are in precarious situations, especially depending on how the rest of the year goes. Like Tulsa, say Tulsa finishes 3-9. You kind of have to fire him, right? I don't know. I don't know. The game itself, I think Memphis is the more talented team. I've been very critical of Tulsa this season. I don't think they've got much going for them on defense or on the offensive line. I don't think that because of those issues on the offensive line, they're capable of running the game like they used to. And they became one-dimensional when Bren was throwing the ball, and with Braxton, they couldn't even throw the ball as well.
Right.
They give up a ton of sacks. Memphis isn't great, but they're better than that in my mind. You know,
they're
both a tough place to play. I'm on the Tigers.
This is how I feel about the game, is that Memphis is a passing team, just like, I mean, Tulsa for the most part was a passing team. They do have Derek Prince run the ball, which is, Memphis will stop the run, but where Memphis struggles on defense is through the air, you know? And so if Tulsa had Bryn, if he comes back, then I think this is an interesting game, because
he can make it a shootout and then it can be fun. You know?
Yes. Neither team has a very good defense. So it's going to come down to who can make less mistakes, which I think now, and I don't have the numbers in front of me. I would have to look them up, but I feel like Tulsa is a more disciplined team than Memphis, but I don't.
But that's a gut feeling. Yeah. I didn't.
It's kind of just how I feel, but I don't know if it's true. I'm going to look it up real quick, because it comes down to that sometimes, like penalties. It's going to come down to, you know, turnovers, the mistakes that you make in games like this where it could go either way.
Hennigan had a pretty bad game last week for turnovers and stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, they're coming off a couple of them. So it's like, but then again, so is Tulsa a little bit. So who's going to take that harder? I don't know. I like to think Phil Montgomery is a better motivator of men. But again, that hasn't proven to be that true this year, so I don't know.
Just on pure raw talent level, though, Memphis is the better team, if you want to just look at the raw talent on the roster.
Right.
Which is its own thing to consider. Not always the deciding factor by any means, but it does play a role into how you have to play the game. I think that Tulsa's offensive line is too much of a mess this season. I think that their defense has regressed too much. And the questions at the quarterback position are too prominent for me to pick them.
Plus, so it's going to be Tulsa averaging 59 penalty yards per game. And it's going to be Memphis averaging only 35. So actually, Tulsa is the more penalized team. They're also
horrific. Of those are terrible, terrible numbers.
No, they're not. I mean, Tulsa's ninth in the conference and Memphis is fifth. But what's really interesting when you're looking at the stats of the teams lined up is Tulsa's red zone defense is just terrible. I mean, just not good.
Yeah. Again, I think their defense top to bottom is not really good, but yeah, that's his problem.
I think I'm going to go Memphis in this game.
Yeah, it's probably the safe play.
Yes.
This next game, which is on Friday night, I'm more interested to see where you go. Because it's East Carolina at Cincinnati. The Pirates.
Oh, you already know. You already know.
Pirates are coming in off a little bit of a hot streak here. They beat the Braves off UCF, and they beat BYU on the road.
Huge win. Then they get this great bye week after that. I mean, come on.
Double week.
It's like the perfect setup.
Double week to prepare for Cincy, who's coming off the Navy game on a short week off the Navy game. That stinks. Someone in the AAC office was giving them a little kick in the shin there, because your defensive line, after you play an academy team, is injured. It's banged up. And they might not be like out for the year with ACLs or anything like that, but they just spent 60 minutes getting cut to the ground. And that hurts. Their knees are shot right now. And you're going to give them a short week to prepare for a team coming off a bye. That's some mean scheduling, frankly.
Yeah, it's not very nice.
Yeah.
I forgot to mention Memphis is favored by 6.5 in the last game. So take that for what it's worth. I think it's probably going to be a touchdown or more that they win that by. But in this game, Cincinnati, given the 5-point nod. Helmet. Interesting.
That's the helmet. And that's not based on recent results. Cincinnati's offense has not been good recently.
Well,
there haven't been on offense recently.
Yes.
Their defense is still very good. I could very much see a version of this game where the defense turns Aylers over a couple times and shuts down the run completely for ECU. And it becomes a 17-21 game. And
that's what I would say about I love Holden Aylers. I think he's incredible. And obviously love Keaton Mitchell. And the whole ECU just vibe is immaculate right now. But playing the Cincinnati, playing in Nippert is not easy. Now, you tell that to a team that just played at BYU. So it's like, okay, they know that. But ECU or Cincinnati is while they're not having the best year, they're still a physical athletic team. And the matchup is interesting with ECU because ECU is more of like a bowling ball. This is how I'm envisioning, you know, just like a little bit of a tank. And I feel like Cincinnati is a little more sleekish as well as being strong. Yeah. When you look at the players. So which is going to win out? It's like
Cincinnati's probably, I don't actually know. I don't have a talent composite in front of me right now, and I'm not going to look it up because I believe
that's fair.
4-7 does it not on three. So whatever. We're not doing it. It's either Cincinnati or UCF though, who is ranked as the highest talent Cincinnati has been recruiting the best. UCF has hit the transfer portal harder. One of those two is the top in terms of talent. And it's probably pretty close between them, where we're talking about like relatively the same. ECU is going to be about middle tier in the conference, you know,
but they're just a bunch of hard workers and like grinders.
But that's to my point though. It's not that they're bad. They're very well developed. Mm-hmm. They scheme well. They're not scared of Cincinnati by any means, you know.
No,
they're all true. But
finesse going to get them though? Well,
exactly. But the problem is the other team has more natural speed and athleticism. And it's not like they're poorly coached or do poor schemes either.
So right.
It's kind of this balancing act that you have to, I guess, kind of like which is better to you.
Well, I'll say this. ECU, to back up my point, leads the conference in third down conversion, which to me is the marker of a truly mentally tough, physically tough team.
That's experience in offense, too. That is a credit to Aylers.
That's true. Aylers and his group, 50% conversion rate, right? Where do you think Cincinnati falls on that, if you had to guess?
Towards the bottom.
Yeah, second to last, just above Temple.
Yeah, because I've watched them play enough this year where they never convert down against SMU or UCF or Navy. They don't convert their downs. That's the last 3 weeks they just had.
They're also highly penalized, 74 penalty yards per game, opposed to ECU, who's second with only 29. So that's going to be
that's one of the most surprising things about Cincinnati to me this season. Is they're not disciplined the way you expect a Luke Fickell team to be disciplined.
Right.
Like, Luke Fickell teams are smart. They're hardworking. They're tough. You know, and Cincinnati is like two of those three things this year. They're not quite, you know, they're still very good, but they're not quite what they were in past seasons. It's a shame that ECU stubbed, you know, missed kicks against NC State and stubbed its toe against Maine, right, and like has these losses that it probably shouldn't have on the schedule.
Right.
Because they tough. Could be in the position that UCF and Tulane are, which is competing for the AAC championship potentially.
I know.
And potentially your sixth bowl, but you stubbed your toe a couple too many times getting out of the gate. Because I mean, this ECU team is excellent. It just is excellent, but you got two conference losses, which sucks. You know? Tricky.
I'm picking ECU. So 6-3 ECU to beat 7-2 Cincy at home, even though the Bearcats are favored by 5.
Emily,
I'm rolling.
No quarter. What? No quarter, Emily. I'm taking the Pirates too.
Yes, let's go.
Confident Pirates team, experienced Pirates team, coming off a bye week, Cincinnati on a short week. That's where I'm going to stick with it. Nippert's tough to play, but who knows? Moving on, Notre Dame versus Navy going to be played in Baltimore this year.
Awesome.
Yeah, for those who don't maybe know because they don't pay as much attention to Notre Dame or Navy as they do in other school. Every Notre Dame and Navy we've played every year for decades and decades. It goes back to a World War II traditional rivalry. It's a very respectful rivalry between the two, but essentially Navy saved Notre Dame as a school. It wouldn't exist without the U.S. Navy because they basically funded it through World War II. to use it as a training ground, but without that money, the school would have folded. So now they play every year as long as Navy wants to play. Notre Dame will never take them off the schedule. They play every other year at Notre Dame, and then the year that would be Navy's home game, they do not play at Marine Corps Memorial Stadium because it's too small. They play at an NFL stadium somewhere around the country. I wanted them in the COVID year to play at Navy to actually get that game there because tickets didn't matter that year anyways. They didn't. Whatever. They just played it at Notre Dame. But yeah, the reason they do that is ticket sales. This game gets 50, 60,000 people at it pretty easily. And you're just shooting yourself in the foot financially if you're not taking that money. Plus, it allows both of them to kind of put the – I know this game's in Maryland still, but like – you know, you'll see it played in like Texas or Florida or wherever, and allows both teams to kind of get a recruiting trip in the middle of the season.
I love when there's games like this with more than football, you know, on the ballot, on the line, I guess you could say. I love games like that. When Stanford plays Army, it's one of my favorites. It just means more, you know, and I know this is not going to be that exciting. Notre Dame's favored by 16.5. They've been rolling. Navy's obviously been struggling, especially without Ty Labate. But Notre Dame does have to face the triple option, which is not something they see.
They see it once
ever, if all the time.
They see it once a year. They see it when they're in Navy every year. Marcus Freeman, should be pointed out, was obviously the defense coordinator at Cincinnati before he ended up at Notre Dame. So he saw it when he was there too. He's not inexperienced against it.
But he's also not on the field, so.
No, but he knows what's coming strategically, and he's putting guys in position. You know what I mean?
Yeah, which is all he can do as a coach, because when that shit comes at you on the field, it's a little different. That's all I'm saying.
Well, Golden's the defense coordinator right now at Notre Dame. I have no idea what his experience with the triple is.
We're about to find out.
I mean, Notre Dame this year has struggled on offense, quarterback issues pretty badly during Freeman's first year there. Tyler Buchner was the starting quarterback out of camp, got injured, done for the season in the Marshall loss, which was a loss Notre Dame never should have taken.
Yeah, that was crazy. Marshall has really not panned out the way that they didn't do anything after that.
Well, I think a lot of people have it's just something to kind of consider. Marcus Freeman's a first-year head coach at an incredibly difficult job. And in the first six games or so of this season, it was very clear he was learning how to do the job on the fly in a lot of ways, you know? And I think he has figured out a lot of aspects of the week-to-week coaching now. They just took it to Clemson. If you didn't watch that game, you can go back. Notre Dame said, we're going to run it down your throat, and they did. Notre Dame has the best tight end in the country. Sorry, Brock Bowers. Michael Mayer is better than you. In my opinion. He's better than Bowers. Yeah, so they're going to throw to the tight end a bunch. They're going to try to run down Navy's throats. They're going to successfully run down Navy's throats because they just ran down Clemson's throats. There's no reason they won't run it down Navy's. Notre Dame's defense is elite. They're not inexperienced with the triple compared to other teams, you know.
Yeah.
Just straight up talent. There's no reason Notre Dame doesn't win it pretty easy.
Agreed.
Yeah, so we're both on Notre Dame?
Yep.
All right. Moving on. This is, I think, Emily's game of the week. It's SMU at USF.
Oh, my God. I literally did not think you were going to say that. Wow. Okay.
Emily.
Because I'm actually going to a different game this week. So I'm like, oh, that's what he's about to say. No.
No. Okay. Emily, is there a chance a dead cat bounces in Tampa?
Oh my God. I don't want to talk about it anymore. Like, just I'm picking SMU. That's all I have.
I have a question for you. If Houston gave up 77 to SMU and USF gave up 54 to Tampa, or sorry, if SMU scored 77 on Houston and and USF gave up 54 to Temple, how many points is SMU going to score if they feel like it?
I don't know.
If they feel like it, I think they can name their number.
They're only favored by 17 and a half. So
cover.
Definitely. Yeah. I think they're going to.
I should point out USF is going to get theirs in this game on offense because they're going to get SMU is bad at defense. And USF isn't small in offense. They've got some talent there. They'll probably score close to 30, but they're going to give up 50. That's just what they do. They just do.
If you like points and Tara Mordecai, this game is for you.
I'll take the over. We're both on SMU. I don't know that we. It'll be interesting to see what USF looks like with a interim staff now. It'll be
because I don't know how much mentally is going to change or like how much the culture was toxic or you know what I mean. Like
I don't know there was a toxic culture there. I think it was just an incompetent head coach who wasn't. Incompetent's a little bit mean. But
yeah, I don't think he was incompetent. I think
in over his head. I think he was in over his head as the head coach.
He just couldn't get it done. It happens.
I think in games, he was incompetent. I think off the field, he was a very good coach and program builder and a CEO mentality thing. I think strategically, schematically, I think he had no idea what he was doing as far as a head coach. And
yeah.
He clearly was not ready for games consistently. So, who knows? Maybe
so. We're both taking SMU.
I'm saying, who knows? Maybe they'll be a little bit more ready with a different person at the helm. But I don't see any reason why that means they win.
Yeah, probably not.
Here we go. Moving on. Temple at Houston.
Houston's favored by 20 points in this game.
Cover. They're going to cover it. I think.
You think they're just going to come out like just so pissed?
I think they're going to be mad about how they lost last week. I think that their defense especially was embarrassed by a good offense. I don't think Temple's all that good in offense this year. Maybe made that a little painfully clear when we were talking about the USF Temple game that I don't think they're particularly good on that side of the ball. So I think Houston's going to be able to hold them down on offense and get theirs when the Cougars have the ball. So, yeah, I don't think it's particularly close. I don't know that we need to dive too deeply into it because I don't think anyone would think it's all that close a game when you...
No.
You know what I mean?
It's
just not that interesting to me, to be honest with you. Hopefully Temple plays close. Hopefully Temple shows that they're confident in improving.
If they can get rolling a little bit on offense, if you look...
Honestly, I think if it's a close game, you have to start talking about Dana Holgerson's future with Houston.
Yeah, but I mean, by your transference property that you just threw at me in the last one, if Temple puts up this many points on USF and Houston gave up that many points to SMU, then it could be argued that they would give up some points to Temple and that Temple's offense could find some success running the ball with the running back. Just won the Doak Walker Weekly Award.
Maybe they can find some success, but what does some success look like?
I don't know, but I don't think they're going to win, but I think they might.
Houston's defense is not as bad as it was last week, or at least it shouldn't be. that last week's game was an anomaly for both teams in a lot of different ways. It was
maybe
it was an outlier. It just was. There's no way of you'll not convince me that that's what exactly what both of those teams were this year, because they played too many different games for me to believe it. You know what I mean? I don't believe that you can score 77 points against Houston and then do nothing against anyone else in this count, you know, against several other teams.
Yeah. I think Temple scores at least two touchdowns. That's what I'm going to say.
At least two touchdowns is not that many, though.
I know, but it's more than they would be scoring a year ago. So that's what against Houston particularly.
Sure.
So
I'll take it. Temple, I'll take Houston.
No, I'm taking Houston, obviously. But I think Temple gets at least two, three touchdowns in there.
Okay. But fair enough.
That's all.
Fair enough.
All right. Last game.
Legit game of the week.
Should have been college game day.
Like, I had my little mini rant. I don't need to repeat it about game day and ESPN controlling the narrative of the sport. UCF at Tulane. That's a top.
That's number 25 UCF at number 22 at number 17 Tulane.
Are you going to give us last week's numbers there for a second?
Yeah, they were written down from before the
playoff
new polls.
Yeah, yes. Before the playoff poll drop. So UCF at Tulane, really interesting game. I'm expecting Yeoman Stadium to be bumping. I think this is going to be a great atmosphere in Tulane. Yeah. I think it's going to be a great atmosphere.
Already talked to a bunch of former players that are coming back for the game, people that are flying back in, actually even as early as tomorrow, to be there for this. So, Tulane's going to have a packed house. UCF, on the other hand, obviously we're dealing with the – Tropical Storm Nicole or whatever it is now. And they're going to be closing Orlando's airport starting tomorrow. So the team is actually heading out early is what I was told. And I don't know how that's going to affect fans and, you know, other people traveling. So
It might affect some people.
We'll see. That
will get to the game if they're so they're probably going to be reselling those tickets on Ticketmaster to Tulane fans if they had them, would be my guess.
We'll see.
It was a road game anyway, so that stays being a road game, essentially. Mm-hmm. The Tropical Storm, I'm in Orlando. I think everyone knows that if they consistently listen to the show, that that's where I live. No one's batted an eye about it here. I know that they're going to be closing a couple things down. But, like, other than my girlfriend's being run ragged right now because she does scheduling for Disney, so they're, like, making her come up with a million different scheduling possibilities. And it's stressful for her doing that. But, like, for the most part, people, it's not like a hurricane. It's not like the last hurricane. You know what I mean? It's just not. It's most people aren't even, like, lining up for gas the way they do. You know?
Yeah, that was crazy.
And it's what people do for hurricanes. I don't think it's going to affect the way I talked about a hurricane affecting a team. The game itself, I think it starts and ends with, can Tulane score enough, to be honest with you? Now, I don't think Michael Pratt's going to have a very fun day. I think he's going to struggle.
He's going to get a lot of pressure.
And that's why I think you're going to see Tulane really try to lean on his running game. Because I don't think that Pratt can consistently make plays against this UCF defense. Now, the UCF defense has been inconsistent against them. ECU ran all over them. Cincinnati didn't have a chance of running against them. I would see Tulane trying to run Pratt a bit the way that we just saw Hennigan run, because UCF just proved that they have a little bit of trouble stopping it. And Pratt's a capable, if not great, runner. Those are the things I'd look out for. I don't know how many points Tulane's going to be able to put. This game that they played last year at the bounce, it was like a 13-3 game. It was an awful, awful offense.
Right.
We don't know who UCF's quarterback is for sure in this game.
Right.
I'd rather it be John Rhys Plumlee, personally. Because I think he's more dynamic. Every UCF fan in the world agrees with me on that, I should point out.
Interesting.
UCF's going to do what Gus does, though. They're going to run tempo, and they're going to try to run it down Tulane's throat. UCF is the more, again, I mentioned, when we talk about composite talent rankings, UCF's notably more talented if you just look at that. No, UCF should be faster and stronger than Tulane in this game. I expect them to be able to run the ball on Tulane. Now, Tulane's defense has been great. I don't want to take anything away. They've been great in the front seven. So it'll be an interesting battle if Tulane can take that away. I just don't see a reason why they can. UCF needs to clean up turnovers. They just do. It's been an issue the last 3 or 4 weeks. Turnovers are fun. But if UCF plays a clean game, I don't see why they don't win.
Yeah. If they play a clean game, I guess that's the biggest.
Well, yeah, it's of course the
biggest caveat. If there is.
I could say that for every game. If, you know, if SMU doesn't throw 5 interceptions, they'll win.
Well, no, I just mean that UCF, they don't generally play the cleanest games.
The last few weeks have been.
That's kind of.
They could have been intimidated by several scores, but they fumbled a couple times going in.
Right. They accrue a lot of penalties.
The penalties, where are they at? Because I haven't noticed it.
53 yards per game, which is fourth worst in the conference.
Yeah, I guess I haven't noticed it as a major issue, but then again, it felt so bad under Josh Heupel for a couple years there for penalties.
Yeah, it's like, almost 500 yards total. So yeah. Well, not great.
They were like 90 or 100 yards a game on average for a couple seasons there. It was bad. So I guess 50 doesn't feel like that many. I also thought that they got jobbed by the referees last week against Memphis for like 45 yards in one drive. I didn't talk about that because I try not to complain about the refs too much, but they definitely blew one face mask call where the guy didn't touch the face mask. He just touched the back of the helmet, which is not a face mask. And a couple of very questionable interference calls. Had my AAC reps against the team's leaving conspiracy hat on.
Good old conspiracies.
I know. Well, look at the Cincinnati scheduling situation this week. Maybe.
Right.
I don't actually believe that, but obviously you can't give away free first downs by committing penalties. No. Obviously, you can't put yourself behind the chains. Obviously you can't give up possessions because you're turning the ball over. Those things are always tricky, and those things will cost you games like they cost you against ECU, you know, but, I do think UCF is the better team overall. Like you said,
who do you think is going to win?
UCF.
Oh, you're picking UCF. Okay.
What?
I'm picking Tulane.
I'm picking UCF. Oh, my God. Who would have guessed that?
I mean, I'm just surprised you've been riding with Tulane, and they're 8-1, and they're at home.
I've been riding pretty hard with UCF, too.
But I'm surprised that you think they're actually going to win
the game. I think there's a very good chance that we see this as a rematch in the conference championship game. Of course, Tulane still has to play Cincinnati coming up, so that will be, I think, the deciding factor in all that. If I'm not mistaken, depends on, obviously, if you drop another game, if you're UCF, then you don't have the tiebreaker against you get into tiebreaker problems after that.
Yeah.
Right now this is a possible preview for the conference championship game. Winner has an inside track on the New Year Six. Very important game. Gotta watch it.
Yep.
Gotta watch it.
Must watch.
And I think they relegated to like ESPNU or something like that. So I'm really mad at ESPN about all this.
Well, I will be there at Yulman. So if you want to follow along with some live coverage for Underdog Dynasty, make sure to follow me on Twitter and Instagram at MLNEM, E-M-I-L-N-E-M. And I'll bring you all the stuff.
And you can find me whatever we're calling it. However long Twitter exists now that Elon Musk is going to run it.
Yeah. TBD.
At Dan_Morrison96. I'm going to miss Twitter when it's completely gone.
Because, when it's dead and gone. It's going to be weird.
I bought it for more than it's worth and now is desperately trying to make money and is just going to go into a spiral. It's nice.
It's crazy times, man. Crazy times. This should be a fun week of AAC football. We're going to see some good games. I'm excited. Unlike last week, which
I regret to admit that I'm probably not going to watch Temple Houston live.
I'm going to watch it just so I can see if Temple scores. But I'm excited. We get Thursday night. We get Friday night. We get some good games Saturday.
Whole big
holiday. Should be good.
Exciting.
Yes.
And we got to get out here before we ramble anymore. So we're off.
We're done. We'll see you next week.